An understanding of the story of the Maccabees and what Sukkot meant to them allows us to appreciate the poignancy of Israeli soldiers in 1973 celebrating Sukkot while battling in defense of their country and their land. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 44, Sukkot in December. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. One particularly moving article featured on the blog of the National Library of Israel describes the celebration of Sukkot in the Holy Land in 1973 during the height of the Yom Kippur War, only several days after the war began. The article features photos of soldiers going out of their way to create makeshift Sukkot while waging war. Sukkot created even on their vehicles. Quote, IDF soldiers are exempt from the Sukkah commandment, the chief military rabbi, Brigadier General Mordechai Piron, stated in a special proclamation on Sukkot in the midst of the Yom Kippur War. Their duty at this time is to completely defeat and destroy the enemy, the rabbi stated, and whoever is unable to perform the mitzvah of sitting in the Sukkah is exempt from it. Despite this unequivocal declaration, there were soldiers who nevertheless tried to observe the mitzvah of sitting in the Sukkah, even at the front. What probably drove the battle-weary soldiers was their desire for even a little of the holiday atmosphere, a brief respite. A reporter for the Al HaMishmar newspaper who accompanied the soldiers in the difficult battles along the Suez Canal in the south reported in Hebrew, despite the bitter fighting, there is no forgetting that civilian life goes on. On the front line, we discovered an improvised Sukkah, a half-track vehicle decorated with branches, completely kosher. End quote. Celebrating Sukkot while battling for the Jewish people and for the land of Israel. Here, the soldiers were following in the footsteps of the Maccabees, who celebrated an unusual Sukkot in the midst of war, one which allows us to understand a great deal about the original Hanukkah story. As we saw yesterday, when Judah took the temple in Jerusalem, the war with the Seleucids was still ongoing, including in the sacred city itself. Yet, with the altar reestablished and dedicated, with paganism removed from Judaism's holiest site, the Hasmonean forces celebrate what will soon be called Hanukkah. But originally, it also has another name. The second book of Maccabees, which seemingly was written in Hebrew but today survives only in Greek and other translations, describes in its first chapter a letter from the Jews of Jerusalem to their fellow Jews in Egypt, urging them to observe the new holiday of Hanukkah. Except the Jews do not use the name Hanukkah. Instead, they use another, very surprising, appellation. Here are several passages from the letter. The Jews in Jerusalem and those in the land of Judea, to their Jewish kindred in Egypt, greetings and true peace. May God do good to you, and may he remember his covenant with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, his faithful servants. In the reign of Demetrius in the 169th year, we Jews wrote to you in the critical distress that came upon us in those years after Jason and his company revolted from the Holy Land and the kingdom and burned the gate and shed innocent blood. We prayed to the Lord and were heard, and we offered sacrifice and grain offering, and we lit the lamps and set out the loaves. And now, see that you keep the festival of booths in the month of Kislev, in the 188th year. End quote. The festival of booths, this of course, is the holiday of Sukkot. That means that one of the original names for Hanukkah was a sort of second Sukkot, or Sukkot in Kislev, Sukkot in the winter. What exactly was done as part of this observance originally, we do not know, but it is clear that linking it to Sukkot was a major motif. And if Hanukkah was originally called Sukkot of Kislev, it is because of what Judah the Maccabee and his men did when they rededicated the temple on the 25th day of Kislev. The book of Maccabees further reports that after rebuilding the altar, Judah's forces remembered the fact that 2 months before they had been unable to observe Sukkot in the temple. And so, as part of the celebration of the dedication of the altar, they did what the Jews usually did on Sukkot in the temple. Here are a few more selections from the book of Maccabees. Now Maccabeus and his followers, the Lord leading them on, recovered the temple and the city. They tore down the altars that had been built in the public square by the foreigners and also destroyed the sacred precincts. They purified the sanctuary and made another altar of sacrifice. Then, striking fire out of flint, they offered sacrifices after a lapse of 2 years, and they offered incense and lighted lamps and set out the bread of the presence. It happened that on the same day on which the sanctuary had been profaned by the foreigners, the purification of the sanctuary took place. That is, on the 25th day of the same month, which was Kislev. They celebrated it for 8 days with rejoicing, in the manner of the festival of booths, remembering how not long before, during the Festival of Booths, they had been wandering in the mountains and caves like wild animals. Therefore, carrying ivy-wreathed wands and beautiful branches and also fronds of palm, they offered hymns of thanksgiving to him who had given success to the purifying of his own holy place. They decreed by public edict, ratified by vote, that the whole nation of the Jews should observe these days every year. Such was the end of Antiochus, who was called Epiphanes. So we are told. Thus, in the middle of the winter, at the end of Kislev, more than 2 months after Sukkot, Jews took palm fronds, or lulavs, and paraded around, exactly as Jews do on Sukkot to this day. And that is why, in commemoration of that glorious moment, one of the original names of Chanukah in Jerusalem was Sukkot of Kislev. This, of course, by the way, offers the answer to one of the most common questions asked in traditional texts about Chanukah today. It is known, as I mentioned yesterday, that an 8-day miracle occurred during the refurbishing of the temple, the finding of the flask of oil that ought to have lasted for only 1 day, but which instead allowed flames to burn for 8. It is the great 16th century rabbi Joseph Caro who asked, if there was enough oil for 1 day, wasn't the miracle of the menorah only 7 days long, and therefore should not the holiday of Chanukah itself last for only 7 days? An enormous amount of answers have been offered to this question, so much so that eventually I believe someone put together an actual volume listing 100 answers to this question, because coming up with answers to Torah questions is what Jews do. But the real answer, of course, is that there is not really a question, because, as we discussed yesterday, the miracle of the oil was not the only reason for the celebration of Chanukah. And, in fact, originally, the focus of the celebration was first and foremost on the dedication of the altar. The holiday proclaimed in celebration of that dedication was established for 8 days in order to parallel the fact that Sukkot is the only 8-day holiday in the Torah, 7 days plus an 8th day known as Shmini Atzeret. The original Sukkot is 8 days, and Sukkot in Kislev, therefore, was 8 days. But why did the Hasmoneans choose, of all holidays, Sukkot as a model for their winter temple dedication? The simple answer is that it was the most recent holiday that should have been observed in the temple, and so this was a sort of makeup. But there is also a larger point here. Biblically, Jews are called to visit Jerusalem 3 times a year for the 3 holidays of Passover, Shavuot, and Sukkot. But it was Sukkot, occurring after the harvest, that Jews in an agricultural society were able to mark without concern for their crops and with the ability to spend a great deal of time in Jerusalem. Thus, the holiday was selected by both Solomon and Zerubbabel to celebrate the establishment of the first and second temples. The tendency of Israelites to spend a great deal of time in Jerusalem during the Sukkot season is also why the holiday of Sukkot, as we have seen, was perceived as a threat by the wicked King Jeroboam, who reigned over northern Israel. Jeroboam, who worried that Jews would become so connected to Jerusalem over Sukkot that they would forget about him. Jeroboam, who therefore set up rival temples of his own in one of the greatest sins in Jewish history. The point is that Sukkot is first and foremost a holiday of national rededication to the temple and to Jerusalem. Professor Jeffrey Rubinstein put it this way, quote, Sukkot, after all, was Hechag, the festival, a title found in both biblical and rabbinic sources. The autumnal harvest concluded the agricultural year, and peasants, now free from the arduous labors, could journey to Jerusalem for the celebrations. Although Passover and Shavuot, Pentecost, were also pilgrimages, they occurred in spring and summer, during the middle of the harvest season, and were not as well attended. Josephus too distinguishes Sukkot by noting that this festival is observed by us with special care, and that it is especially sacred. End quote. And Rubinstein concludes by adding that this is why the Maccabees would also have marked Sukkot in Kislev. As he puts it, quote, fighting the guerrilla war against the forces of evil, the faithful Jews could not observe Sukkot in its proper manner. After their victory in Kislev, they replicated the festivities neglected 2 months previously. Inability to celebrate Sukkot was a principal consequence of losing the temple. Resumption of its celebration, the essential benefit of the temple's rededication. End quote. An understanding of the story of the Maccabees and what Sukkot meant to them allows us to appreciate the poignancy of Israeli soldiers in 1973, celebrating Sukkot while battling in defense of their country and their land. Only 6 years earlier, in 1967, ancient Jerusalem had been restored to the Jewish state. And suddenly, 6 years later, on Sukkot, on the holiday of the temple, going into battle, these Israeli soldiers now brought Sukkot, the festival of the temple, with them. And this indicated that whether they were fighting in the Sinai or the Golan, what these soldiers felt they needed was the memory of Jerusalem and the warm embrace of God. The article on the National Library blog concludes, quote, "The Sukkot holiday of 1973 began under the shadow of desperate battles on both fronts, with real concern for the survival of the Jewish state. But by the end of Sukkot, the turning point had come, and IDF forces moved from defense to offense. A journalist from Ma'ariv reported on October 17th from deep in Syrian territory. On the main road approaching Khushnia, in between two damaged tanks, a yellowing thatch blows in the wind, covering an improvised sukkah. A soldier from the Combat Engineering Corps tells us, the guys from the armor division set up the sukkah. Yes, they managed to fulfill the mitzvah of sitting in it before they were called to destroy the last enemy pocket at the Khushnia Junction." End quote. Thus we have heirs to Judah the Maccabee, heirs to the ancient celebrants of Sukkot, though these IDF soldiers observed the holiday in its original time rather than in December. Soldiers at war with makeshift Sukkot as they travel. Sukkot that embody the soldiers' faith, their ability to feel the Almighty's presence, and their constant connection to Jerusalem. What a privilege it is to be spiritually linked to Jews such as this. Jews who, in the midst of one of the most dangerous moments in their lives and one of the most precarious periods in the Jewish state, ensconce themselves in a sukkah, embodying the spirit of the Maccabees. It is in the merit of men like this that Jews and the Jewish state deserve to have Jerusalem once again. This is Meir Soloveitchik. Looking forward to learning together tomorrow. Signing off.